listening to All About Jack, a C.S. Lewis podcast. I'm William O'Flaherty from EssentialCSLewis.com, your host and the producer of the show. And today I'm actually the guest. The reason for this is I recently gave a talk in Tennessee to the C.S. Lewis Society of Chattanooga. This was on Tuesday, August the 12th. My topic was Preacher Lewis, 75 Years Later. In this presentation, I provided an overview of the times Lewis gave a sermon at a church. The first was back in 1939, 75 years ago. I also went into some detail with his first, last, and best pulpit message. While I would have liked to have shared the actual audio from that night, due to some technical difficulties, this is not possible. Instead, I re-recorded the speech a few days ago, which is what you are about to hear, but removed comments and other aspects aimed for a live audience, which is why this 40-minute talk is about 10 minutes shorter. I did provide a handout for those present, and you may like to have that in front of you as you listen when you visit the show notes at EssentialCSLewis.com or at AllAboutJack.podbean.com. You will find a link to download that, as well as links to other related online content mentioned in the talk. Nearly all casual readers of the creator of Narnia, like I once was, are not aware of the fact that he ever gave a sermon. Others, maybe like yourself, may not even know that one of his most beloved essays, The Weight of Glory, was first given as a sermon. So in this talk, I want to provide you with an overview of the times Lewis stood in the pulpit and discuss a few of those messages in detail. Due to the number of times Lewis preached, it would be impossible to go in depth with all of his sermons. So after briefly outlining all of his messages, I will discuss in greater detail his first, last, and most famous times that he wore the preacher hat. Given the title of my talk is Preacher Lewis, 75 Years Later, should be obvious that from 2014 it was 75 years ago, back in 1939, that he made his debut in the pulpit. Now let's consider this date in context. This was before The Problem of Pain and the Screwtape Letters were published. The Problem of Pain came out in October 1940, and the book version of The Screwtape Letters was 1942. The Screwtape Letters, of course, is what first brought Lewis fame. It was only later, when Narnia came out, do you remember that date, 1950, that he became more well-known for that, to where today, that is what he is most well-known for. So back in 1939, Lewis was not well-known at all, although as we will see, he was on the verge of becoming well-known. It was then on Sunday, October the 22nd of that year, that Lewis preached at the Church of St. Mary the Virgin in Oxford. At the time, this message was called None Other Gods, Culture in Wartime. Then it was reprinted as The Christian in Danger, before becoming better known today as Learning in Wartime. Now, because this is his first, I'll give you more particulars about it a little later. Speaking of this date of October 22nd, 1939, did you know that something else not related to Lewis happened on this date? It was the first pro football game being televised. Now, you had to live in New York City to even watch the game. It was between the Brooklyn Dodgers and the visiting Philadelphia Eagles. By the time Lewis preached his second sermon, nearly 2 years later, he was on the verge of becoming a very popular person. The Screwtape Letters, which we mentioned, came out in book form in 1942. This is 1941. It was released weekly, and at the time of his second sermon, The Sixth Correspondence to Wormwood had just been released. 2 months after this sermon, he would be on the radio giving his first BBC talk. So what was the date? June 8th of 1941. Even though this date does not stick out in hardly anyone's mind, the sermon definitely does. The Weight of Glory was first given as a sermon at the Church of St. Mary the Virgin, and as noted already, it's clearly one of his most popular shorter works. Now, because this is his most famous sermon, I will give you more details about it at the end of my talk. Now, after his second sermon, the information about the times that Lewis was behind the pulpit gets a little sketchy. There are at least 5 different messages that we know a great deal about, Actually, the number is 6, but we'll explain why I say 5 initially. Now, there are 4 additional times that we have very few facts on. And then shortly before preparing this message, I had corresponded with some other C.S. Lewis scholars. One of them actually had emailed me a question asking about something unrelated to sermons, and I passed it on because I did not know the answer to another gentleman. And in his reply, he made reference to sermons that Lewis preached and suggesting that there were even more times that I'm going to talk about. They cross over with something that's called the Royal Air Force talks that he gave, which was initiated by chaplains. Since this information came late in the process of preparing for my talk in Chattanooga, I have yet to integrate that information. So what's the bottom line here? The bottom line is that Lewis preached more than the 12 times that I'm going to talk about, but the details are somewhat sketchy on many of those titles, but I'm going to approach it from 12 different times that Lewis preached, although we are almost certain that he gave more than 12. Speaking of sources of information, here's a good moment to acknowledge my debt to someone that I used material from, and that is Dr. Greg M. Anderson, a person I've never met. In the 3rd volume of C.S. Lewis' Life, Works, and Legacy, which was edited by Dr. Bruce Edwards, Dr. Anderson authored a piece called The Sermons of C.S. Lewis. That article was an invaluable resource. Another resource that I used is the C.S. Lewis Reader's Encyclopedia that is now out of print. It contains a great deal of information, just like the 4-volume set that was edited by Dr. Bruce Edwards. Now, that 4-volume set is rather expensive, but worth getting. The C.S. Lewis Reader's Encyclopedia that I'm mentioning now, that, though it is out of print, is still available with used copies at a fairly reasonable price. And then there's a great online resource by Dr. Joel Heck called Chronologically Lewis. That resource is freely available at his website, joelheck.com. And that goes into an incredible amount of detail, literally taking Lewis's life day by day when there's information that we know about it. Now, he also subsequently has made available for purchase a desk calendar that is available that just highlights essentially one for each day of the year that you can go to his website, joelheck.com, to learn about how to purchase that. Now, the next known sermon from Lewis was given on March 29, 1942. However, we don't have a transcript or adapted essay of it. At least officially we don't. Unofficially, it's been suspected that it could be material from what we know as Religion, Reality, or Substitute. This is an article by Lewis that was first published in World Dominion in the September-October issue, 1941. We think this because when he preached this message, which we know it was at Headington Quarry Church, he signed a registry at the church, but there's only a small amount of space for him to write his message title, and he simply put Religion, ... In the essay suggested by Dr. Anderson, Religion, Reality, or Substitute is therefore a very likely candidate. Now, this essay is found in a collection called Christian Reflections. Now, even though we don't clearly know all the sermons Lewis preached, for simplicity, I will continue to number them as if these were the only ones. So therefore, the 4th sermon from Lewis is entitled Miracles. It was preached September the 27th, 1942. It was given at St. Jude on the Hill Church, and then published in their church newspaper in their October 1942 issue, as well as The Guardian, a publication also, released it in their October 2nd, 1942 issue. Now, a side note about this sermon, it was given, as you just heard me say, 1942. This is 5 years before a book that you are probably familiar with, Miracles, A Preliminary Study, came out. Material from this sermon is included in that book. And then there's a sermon I'll speak about in a few minutes that also has material that is in this book. Next, the 5th pulpit appearance by Lewis we know about occurred on April the 4th, 1943. Now, some resources have this listed as the 1st, but thanks to Dr. Bruce Johnson, we know it is the 4th. He cross-referenced it and noted that knowing that Lewis gave this on a Sunday, it had to be the 4th of April, 1943, and not the 1st. All we really know is that the word forgiveness is in the title, and it was preached at Lewis's home church, Holy Trinity, in Headington Quarry. This is where there was only just so much space, and so all we have is one word. Now, if you know your Lewis writings well, then you are aware that there are two related shorter works that have this type of title. One is the talk he gave on the BBC that was part of the third radio series, simply known just as Forgiveness. It was given on October the 18th, 1942. That's when the BBC message was given. Then there's another candidate, and that is there's an essay that's found in the revised and expanded edition of The Weight of Glory. These are the 1980 and later editions. There's an essay in there called On Forgiveness that's a likely candidate. Now, that particular essay was not released during Lewis's lifetime. The sixth message from Jack, as he was known to his friends, was given in February 1944, and this was at the Congregational Mansfield College Chapel. We don't have an exact date, we just know the month, and that's all we really know. We don't know a title. The next message, however, number seven, is less mysterious, but it is also one of Lewis's most complicated pieces. Transposition is the name of it. It was preached on May the 28th, 1944. This was on the Feast of Pentecost at the Congregational Mansfield College Chapel. A printed version of it came out in the UK as the namesake to the 1949 book, a collection called Transposition and Other Addresses. When that book was published in the U.S., it was given the title of The Weight of Glory, one that, again, people know very well because it's one of his most beloved essays. But the book originally came out in the U.K. as Transposition, the namesake for the sermon that I'm referring to. Now, there's a couple of things interesting about this sermon. One I mentioned in an article, which was a precursor to this message that I'm giving today about Lewis's sermons. That's on the cslewis.com official blog from Harper One. I won't mention that. You'll need to read that article. There'll be a link in the show notes. But the other aspect I will mention is that Lewis did add to this sermon or the essay version. Again, it was originally printed in 1949, and then he had another collection just before he died called They Asked for Paper. When that was released, Lewis decided to add to it when he was reflecting on it. Now, this revised version is in the revised and expanded edition of The Weight of Glory that has additional essays along with the expanded version of Transposition that I'm referring to. The eighth message from Jack is one related to the theme I was noting about a few minutes ago, and that is on miracles. This one is called The Grand Miracle. It was preached on April the 15th, 1945 at St. Jude on the Hill Church in London. It was published not long after in The Guardian. It was in their April 27th issue of that same year. It is best available in God in the Dock. And as I've already noted, material from this is adapted and included in the book called Miracles. As a side note, many people find this book, Miracles, very difficult. I know I did. I tend to like to listen to books. And when I first attempted this book, it was by listening to the audio version. And it's Lewis, you know, really builds on a lot of precepts by precepts. He rarely wastes any words. And so I found it very difficult to kind of follow along until actually reading the book. But now the sermons that were later adapted into the book are much more easy to follow. And so if for some reason you have found the book difficult to read, Miracles, A Preliminary Study, then you might try reading the essay versions, which are both available in God in the Dock. Now, the next two sermons by Lewis were preached back-to-back weeks, and they were actually the same message. This is where, when I said there's five or actually six messages from Lewis that we know a great deal about, and that is because two of them are the exact same one. The first one was given March the 31st, 1946. He spoke at his own church again in Headington Quarry. And then a week later, on April the 7th, he gave this message to the congregation at St. Matthew's Church in Northampton. Now, that church published Lewis's message in a book along with four others. This book was simply called Five Sermons by Laymen, because Lewis was a layman and the four other individuals that happened to preach in a series were laymen as well. Now, at the time, this message by Lewis did not have a title. It was just simply known as Sermon by Lewis. However, we know it today as Miserable Offenders, an interpretation of prayer book language. It is found in God in the Dock. The 11th time behind the pulpit for Lewis was March the 9th, 1947. It was at Quarry Church again, and according to Dr. Anderson, that's all we know about it. We know the date, we know he was there, we don't know anything else. The 12th and final sermon was nearly 10 years later, but again, as I noted previously, we have reason to believe that Lewis preached more than a dozen times. Now, this last known message, though, is called a slip of the tongue, and it's a rather short one. It was given January the 29th, 1956, at the chapel at Magdalen College. A publication called The Lion printed it in their January 1963 issue under the title Thoughts of a Cambridge Don. Under the more familiar title of A Slip of the Tongue, we can find it in the revised and expanded editions of The Weight of Glory, anything that came out 1980 or later. Now, I'll be telling you more about this message in a little bit, including a summary of it. But before doing that, I wanted to now then go back and give you greater details about Lewis's first sermon. Do you recall the name of that message? It can be a little difficult because that debut talk has three different titles, and we actually have Lewis to blame for this. Sometimes among the essays or even poetry from Lewis, Walter Hooper, who has done a lot of editing over the years, he's done a name change. However, in this case, it was Lewis who changed the name. Today, we know it best as Learning in Wartime, but when it was preached on October the 22nd, 1939, it was called None Other Gods, Culture in Wartime. Then it was first published in booklet form as The Christian in Danger before the end of the year. This was from the Student Christian Movement. Now, another interesting fact is that those who heard Lewis preach the message that day actually received a printed copy of the sermon. Dr. Anderson notes that one of the reasons that the vicar of St. Mary's, the Reverend Theodore Milford, asked Lewis to take over on that Sunday morning was because of his enjoyment of the Pilgrim's Regress, which, if you recall, was published in 1933. But let's not lose sight of the historical context, because Lewis wasn't asked to preach solely on the fact that he wrote an interesting, though actually the Pilgrim's Regress is somewhat of a difficult book. He was a veteran of World War I, and England had just declared war on Germany the previous month. The topic Lewis addressed was tailor-made for his audience. This was the University Church at Oxford, and he dealt with a delicate subject aimed at the students there. So get this, the war had just begun, and even if the world didn't end as a result of it, as some people thought, there were clearly chances that the young people listening to him would not be able to complete their pursuit of higher learning. So imagine if you were Lewis in this context. What would you say to them? Well, if you're familiar with the essay version we have, Lewis hit, as they say, a home run. Had he never preached another sermon, this would have been enough. In fact, Ashley Sampson, who would go on to publish The Problem of Pain that we mentioned, this was done in 1940, he liked this message so much that he got Lewis to agree to let him add it to a volume he was editing called Famous English Sermons. That book ultimately came out the following year. Now, even though he targeted his message to the people present, much of what Lewis said has universal application. Lewis begins the message by acknowledging that there was a question weighing heavy on people's mind. He put it this way, quote, "What is the use of beginning a task which we have so little chance of finishing?" However, he immediately notes that a bigger question needs to be considered, and it doesn't have to be asked just in a time of a war. Why should anyone pursue learning at all, even in peaceful times? Shouldn't a person be more concerned about more serious matters? For the Christian, eternal issues should always be the central concern, and as a result, it needs to be all we lived for, correct? Not so according to Lewis. Thus, learning shouldn't be put on hold during a time of war. In fact, when opening the topic up to a larger context, Lewis manages to tackle the great debate of sacred versus secular, and within this argument, he proclaims a quote that most people are familiar with. good philosophy must exist if for no other reason, because bad philosophy needs to be answered. However, before that proclamation, Lewis gives a couple of examples to clarify why all of our life can't be exclusively and explicitly religious in the narrowest sense of most people's understanding of that expression. First, Lewis recalls how before he served in World War I, that he thought his, quote, life in the trenches would, in some mysterious sense, be all war. This wasn't the case at all. He found his view, and most people's view, of active service to be completely wrong. Next, he uses the illustration of a person living near a dangerous body of water, like, you know, the ocean or the sea, and how important it is for such an individual to learn some life-saving skills. Yet, it would be foolish for someone to devote themselves completely to this, to the exclusion of anything else. It is, as Lewis said, quote, a duty worth dying for, but not worth living for. Another key point he makes is, quote, Christianity does not exclude any of the ordinary human activities. Also, when considering what to do or not to do, even beyond the question of furthering one's education, he offers, quote, the solution of this paradox is, of course, well known to you. And here Lewis quotes a verse of Scripture. 1 Corinthians 10:31, whether you eat or drink or whatsoever you do, do all to the glory of God. Finally, Lewis proclaims, quote, there is no essential quarrel between the spiritual life and the human activities as such. While Lewis makes additional points in this message, I'll leave the rest for you to read or review for yourself. So that's the end of the summary for the first sermon. Now, I want to go back to the final sermon, the 12th one that I was listing a moment ago, to consider it in some detail, but not quite as much, because it was a rather short message. Again, it was given on January the 29th, 1956, at Magdalen College. The version we have is called A Slip of the Tongue. Lewis kicks off his message by commenting that he felt under less pressure as a layman when preaching because he was, quote, comparing notes and, quote, not so much presuming to instruct. He then shared an experience where he had recently prayed as if the temporal world was more important than the eternal. Having caught his own slip of the tongue, he reflected on how easy it is to reverse one's priority and live as though the temporary aspects of life is of greater value than those that are everlasting. He elaborated further that even though we believe the eternal world is more important, we, quote, guard the things temporal and are frequently careful about what we promise when praying so as to not commit more than we are willing to carry out when we feel less spiritually minded. Lewis then notes the following, or rather he quotes someone he can't recall made this statement. Have we never risen from our knees in haste for fear God's will should become too unmistakable if we prayed longer? Again, that's something Lewis wrote, noting it was from someone else. I tried to track down this quote to see, even though Lewis couldn't remember where it was, and I couldn't find the source. Now, this point almost hits too close to home for me. I'm sure there have been many times that I was in a situation where I wanted to know what the Lord wanted me to do, but yet I maybe quite didn't want to know, and I didn't stay long enough to hear his answer. Ignorance is bliss, as they say, right? A final point I want to underscore is that Lewis goes on to remind us, quote, it is not so much our time and so much our attention that God demands. It is not even all our time and all our attention. It is ourselves. In closing, I want to return to the most well-known sermon by Lewis. I did it this way to say, I save the best for last. Truthfully, though, what can be said about The Weight of Glory? It's absolutely a masterpiece. Even what I'm about to share falls short of really capturing all the important aspects of The Weight of Glory, but I must attempt to summarize it. As noted already, it was given on June the 8th, 1941, at the Church of St. Mary the Virgin in Oxford. Afterwards, it was published in the November 1941 issue of Theology. Now, that journal still exists, and you can actually get a free reprint online of The Weight of Glory. This was done last year. If you check the show notes, you can get a direct link to it. It's part of a special virtual issue containing several pieces by Lewis that Theology had originally published. Well, for the few of you who may not be familiar with The Weight of Glory, let me begin with stating why it is considered so great. A key reason is the nearly perfect balance of being a carefully reasoned talk that includes highly memorable quotes and illustrations. Lewis began with wanting us to consider the highest virtue and announced that most would proclaim unselfishness supreme. We are then immediately warned how far this misses the mark, because it reverses the priority of the champion, love. Lewis put it this way: the negative idea of unselfishness carries with it the suggestion not primarily of securing good things for others, but of going without them ourselves, as if our abstinence and not their happiness was the important point. Thus, self-denial, as Lewis notes immediately after this, while important, is not to be, quote, an end in itself. Next, he points out what the result of the correct form of denying ourself is in the fact that it makes an appeal to our desires. What follows, then, is a lengthy elaboration on why this promise of reward shows that our earthly desires are, quote, not too strong, but too weak. And why, also, it is not a mercenary affair to be offered such a reward, for there are both proper and mercenary or inappropriate rewards. Here's how Lewis put it, quote, we are half-hearted creatures fooling around with drink and sex and ambition when infinite joy is offered us. Like an ignorant child who wants to go on making mud pies in a slum because he cannot imagine what is meant by the offer of a holiday at the sea. We are far too easily pleased. Now, having noted how good this sermon is, I must admit that it has some drawbacks, at least for me personally. And maybe you are like myself in that you are not familiar with some of the allusion Lewis uses. He spoke of Greek poetry and several literary figures that many people like myself don't read today. If you are like me, you'll want to consider visiting a website called Lewisiana.nl. That's Lewisiana.nl, and there will be a link in the show notes. Among the many great resources at this website is a section on The Weight of Glory where it explains various quotations and allusions. Now, getting back into his message, next Lewis uses a parallel that, like a student, we don't understand how our lessons lead to an enjoyment we have never tasted. So as earthly creatures, we have only a foretaste of our ultimate reward. And yet there are some earthly tastes we can get so fixed on that we let it overshadow our desire for our real destiny. Here's how Lewis put it, quote, if we are made for heaven, the desire for our proper place will be already in us, but not yet attached to the true object, and will even appear as the rival of that object. Shortly after he provided us with a haunting expression of our experiences here on earth about the beauty we do see, they are, quote, good images of what we really desire, the scent of a flower we have not found, the echo of a tune we have not heard, news from a country we have never yet visited. While I've already given some details about this excellent message already, it is beyond the scope of this reflection to go into all the main points Lewis makes. Having said that, there is one final aspect I wish to highlight. Some of the points around the idea of glory that Lewis makes, using 2 Corinthians 4, 16-17, as the text from where he gets the expression, the weight of glory. Lewis points out that the concept of glory is most often used in reference to our material world. Fame is a word also associated with this, in the sense of wanting to be famous in the world. Lewis challenges us, however, to seek fame with God in the sense of approval or appreciation by God. Let me share two different quotes on Lewis about glory. Quote, glory as Christianity teaches me to hope for it turns out to satisfy my original desire and indeed to reveal an element in that desire which I had not noticed. And then the other quote, he says glory means, quote, good report with God, acceptance by God, response, acknowledgement, and welcome into the heart of things. Finally, Lewis brings us back to the virtue of love he mentioned at the beginning by commenting that, quote, it may be possible for each to think too much of his own glory. Yet considering the glory of your neighbor is something you can never think too much of. Thus, we should be very concerned with what our neighbor's relationship with God is like and make every effort to improve it. Here's how Lewis puts it. Quote, the load or weight or burden of my neighbor's glory should be laid daily on my back, a load so heavy that only humility can carry it, and the backs of the proud will be broken. And with that, I end my summary of The Weight of Glory and also this talk about the sermons of C.S. Lewis. Thanks for listening to this edition of All About Jack, a C.S. Lewis podcast. Don't forget to check the show notes for links and for that handout at EssentialCSLewis.com or at the location of the podcast itself, which recently moved. That new address is allaboutjack.podbean.com. Podbean is spelled P-O-D-B-E-A-N. Besides the latest shows being listed only there, I'm slowly moving my older shows to that location, and soon they will be only available there. Again, that's allaboutjack.podbean.com. If you're on Twitter or Facebook, be sure to join me there. At Twitter, you go to twitter.com/EssentialLewis. Then on Facebook, it's facebook.com/EssentialCSLewis. Finally, if you'd like to see about having me speak to your group on this or other Lewis topics, reach me at info@EssentialCSLewis.com. That's info@EssentialCSLewis.com.